Hey, everybody. This is Ricky Rackman from Headbangers Ball and the Cat Outs Hollywood podcast. And you are listening to Talk To Me. And of course, remember to keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me. This is episode 216. The guest this week is Rob Ruscha, formerly of From Zero, currently of the Robcast podcast. Studio engineer, mixer, producer, extraordinaire, does so many things, wears so many hats. So it's going to be good to catch up with Rob, see what he's up to, kind of go on a little bit of a journey of Rob's life. I enjoy him on the Robcast podcast, so have him over here on the Talk To Me podcast. That's going to be fantastic. Before we get into all that stuff, thank you guys for checking out each and every week Talk To Me Live on uncontrolledNoise.com. Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern. It's been a lot of fun doing the live show, getting everything together, playing the music, having the guests, and it gives you guys content throughout the week. If you don't listen on Thursday nights, the segments are played the following week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if I have enough content or guests or whatnot to play for you guys. So I've been having a ton of fun doing that stuff, and it's just fun to kind of have the live show going and to play some songs, talk to my friends, talk to fellow podcasters, talk to the rock stars, and have all of the fun that we have over on Talk To Me Live, Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, uncontrolledNoise.com, and that is noise with a Z. I have some other things in my head in the works, because I'm a one-man show over here. Maybe on Fridays, either doing a Flashback Friday, taking an old interview that you guys may have missed, and repackaging it into maybe a little behind the scenes of that interview, maybe where it went, what happened with it, all that good stuff. And then I'm really thinking about doing a Friday football show, either with some friends or do a solo Friday show. So if you don't like sports, you don't like football, just skip over that one. But if you do, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we can talk trash on everyone else's teams. You guys know that my team is the Tennessee Titans, so if you're a Colts fan, you can say stuff, but everyone else, we'll see. And you guys know that Talk To Me is brought to you each week by Scott Bowling with his show Good Company with Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia. If you guys like great interviews, great well-shot interviews with music's biggest guests, all from Scott's house, I can't even imagine doing a show from my house. If you're a rock star and you want to come over my house and do an interview, you're more than welcome. Just let me know. But if you want to check out Scott's house and all the good stuff going on there with members of Korn, Seven Dust, Stuck Mojo, Fozzy, he even had the great Nathan Mowry on. How cool is that? Check it out, Good Company with Bowling on YouTube, or check it out at scottgoodcompany.com and let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. So in honor of having Rob Ruscha on, let's check out a classic from Zero. The song is called Check Ya, and then we will talk to Rob Ruscha.
Forget about the time, it's up to me. You left me, now it's over.
Hey, Rob, how you doing, man?
Good. How's it going?
You know, just living the dream.
Living the dream.
Oh, man. Well, it's good to have you on. Nice. I've actually, you know, the bread and butter of this podcast has always been kind of the new metal guys. And so a guy from Zero has always kind of been on the list. So it's glad to have you on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man. It's been a while since that cycle, but God, I still find people every now and again that bring it up, and especially the more I've been working with Nonpoint, because the fans of Nonpoint seem to be a lot of the old school From Zero fans, so they all remember that.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. This style, our style, has kind of come back around again to almost be cool again, so yeah, From Zero is definitely, you know, one of those bands that had a, you know, I think that, like, Check It was a pretty decent hit in the new metal world, so it's kind of cool to for all that stuff to kind of cycle back around again.
Yeah, and to see some of the same bands, like the tours that are out there, with, you know, Seven Dust still being out there, POD still being out there, you know, the old school bands from that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s new metal push.
Right.
That, you know, was pretty, I mean, Disturbed resurging and becoming, you know, as big as they've ever been. You know, like that, like, started in, you know, just the metro scene here in Chicago.
Yeah, know, Disturbed, like, very, Disturbed for me is the one that kind of blows me away that they got that big. But
it's interesting, because I think it was because they were the first ones, you know, like as far as that scene in Chicago, you know, like blowing up the scene. And so every band that was at that level who could play in front of 1,000 people at, like, a Metro or Double Door show was starting to get interest from labels. And all it did was push Disturbed farther, you know, like, because they were the ones that set that bar. It was like the same time that had happened out in, like, the West Coast with, like, bands like Limp Bizkit and Orgy and Korn. And,
right,
you know, like, it was all about that style or that scene. So I think that had a lot to do with it, like, you know, Disturbed having the right place at the right time kind of thing, you know, and then every band after that, while only a few of them remain from that era, you know, Soil, I think, is still out there doing their thing, but it's nowhere near what it was when they got signed. And
right,
I think that's about it, you know, like, everything else dropped off as far as the scene. But Disturbed has become this arena worldwide, you know, phenomenon.
Yeah, I think Chicago was the one town that my pre-Primer 55 band looked at to move to, because we were out of Nashville. Mm-hmm. And we'd actually driven up and driven around Chicago, kind of, you know, looking at places. My girlfriend started to go to Columbia up there. You know, we were kind of like, well, we kind of know some people already and kind of get in that scene. And that would have been roughly 99, 2000 maybe. So, I mean, yeah, it was like roughly in that time period where when we talked about relocating because Nashville wasn't doing anything for us, you know, because we were selling out 1,000 seat clubs in Nashville, but no one was seeing, you know, none of the industry was seeing that.
Yeah, because they were looking in different cities.
Right.
And, you know, like, that seemed to be the thing. That it happened in Florida with Nonpoint, and there was Darwin's Waiting Room. There was a band called Endo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was the same kind of a, like, mecca, you know, like, in these different regions where it was the labels were all looking in there, you know, like, you know, who's the next whatever the first one was. So in the Chicago scene, it was like, where's the next Disturbed sitting? And From Zero happened to have the same management. So we kind of had that juice behind us because they were the first ones to get a record deal. So our managers had the interest of every label as they were looking, like, hey, what else do you have? You know, what else do you got for us to sign?
Right.
And so the festival that happened every year here in Chicago called Mob Fest, which stood for Music Over Business, became this thing to play every year. And every year a band was getting a deal.
That's crazy.
You know, it was just kind of like all the labels came here for it. They had panel discussions about, you know, different things at the Metro, and it was kind of like a mini South by Southwest. And it really pushed a lot of bands' careers forward, but also became more of a favor festival at some point, you know, where it was who knew who and what, you know, what club owner owed who a favor and why is that band playing there? And I mean, it was ridiculous. So at some point it just became no interest to anybody anymore in the industry, and it faded away. But for like 4 or 5 years, it was consistent. like even the Killers had played Mobfest, and that's where they got their deal.
Wow.
It was like showcases, you know, like back in the day, that's what you had to do.
Yeah.
And now it seems like now all you got to do is put it up on YouTube. And if it's good enough or big enough, you become famous.
Well, which is nice. I mean, I do, you know, we've talked about that on the show a little bit. The phenomenon, you know, like it or not, the phenomenon that Old Town Road is and became is insane because the guy had one song. And it's like, now it's on pace to become like what the most, one of the biggest songs on Billboard ever. And he's still only got like the one song. And it's insane that if you put something out there and it's good, it's going to just catch fire.
But if there's nothing to follow it up, he'll disappear as fast as the next thing that comes up.
True.
Because there was, you know, Gangnam Style.
Right.
That did like get 3 billion or more, you know, views, and everybody was listening to it, and all the kids were doing the same exact thing that I see in videos now, where I see that Lil Nas X guy come out and try to sing the song. He can't because the kids are so much louder, like every single one of them. And I'm like, how are these kids knowing this song? And like, you know, it's because YouTube is kind of the babysitter for the generation, it seems. And I mean, I do a lot of YouTube work in the studio. Like I work with a lot of YouTubers and I mix their audio. So I kind of understand what they're trying to do and how they're doing it. But it's such a great place to launch your career now. And that didn't exist back in the, you know, Primer and From Zero days and, right. The, you know, beginning. And the bands that are still around are making their rounds now by getting content creators involved. And that is helping them, you know, kind of try to monetize more and, you know, try to support themselves, whereas the labels are kind of not doing that. So it's a great platform, but I also see it being, you know, a one-hit wonder platform too.
Yeah, you that's know, definitely it's, there. I know when I had Mark from Chimera on forever ago, and, you know, because they were one of the first bands that I saw that kind of got their, you know, they put their music on mp3.com and got picked up by Farm Club. And, you know, you had to... Uploading your song to the internet 20 years ago was a you know, you had to know somebody that knew something about computers. It wasn't just a quick rip, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it took like skill, and that was like, it's something actually Rob Rivera and I talk about all the time, is that every band needs, you know, someone in their band that's tech savvy, that's, you know, able to do the things that they don't have to go and farm out to other people.
Right.
You know, like they can upload their own content. They can distribute their own digital, you know, releases. They almost don't need a record label anymore. You know, it's kind of, especially catalog bands that have 20 years behind them, they could easily take away from a label and go digital and, you know, try to, you know, make it themselves, and way easier to do it now than it would have been back then. You know, like, and when MySpace came out and you had a player on the page and you could put 4 songs or whatever, and, you know, bands got tons of plays, but there was no way to monetize that. You know, it was just about exposure.
Yeah. And I mean, there was definitely all of those bands that got signed through MySpace, you know, like a Job for a Cowboy and all those bands, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because of the exposure and the plays. And then it became kind of the foreshadowing part of what influencers are now, you know, like as far as with social media. Yeah, and people that are getting paid just to wear something or talk about something. And at that point it was, you know, this MySpace page is getting so much traffic, you know, how can we, you know, turn that into money? Well, you got to put the band on tour or something, you know. Now they don't do that. You know, it's like bands are trying to fund themselves. So the more they can monetize digitally, I think the better.
Yeah. Let's jump back to From Within. I was in a band for 2 seconds called From Within, and I'm going to say that 90 times on this interview.
From Within.
Yeah. From Zero. Was the rumor true that you guys got signed and only had 5 songs?
No, I never heard that rumor. That's weird. We had recorded our own CD by ourselves of like 12 songs. And I mixed it and this was like the beginning of my mixing world. But From Zero was where I cut my teeth. And between Jet and I, we produced and mixed a whole CD that we funded ourselves, duplicated 1,000 of them. It's known as the Green CD, which is very rare, I guess, nowadays, because someone offered me $150 for mine.
Nice.
But I don't want to get rid of it because it's the only one I have left. but a lot of people seem to have it. And I've been asked recently to sign a few and I was blown away. But the versions of the songs are completely different than One Nation Under, but some of the songs are the same. And there's a few songs on the Green CD that were on One Nation Under that didn't change at all. And then there were some that got really reworked and like kind of offended some fans in a sense, because they were, you know, what happened to the original Czechia? Sounds nothing like Czechia on One Nation Under. Like there's a Czechia that's got like a slap bass breakdown in the middle of it. Awesome. And actually I could send you a track. I'll send it to you, because if you hear that compared to where Czechia is on One Nation Under, there's like a shell of that song. Like, we basically, our producer was like, hey, this is the best part of the song. Now let's trash everything else and come up with something. You know, like, and that was kind of the us being naive and young at the time, you know, and being like, okay, label's paying for it. Producer says we got to do it. Let's do it. You know, like, and not having a voice of our own. And that was kind of an eye opener at the tail end of it all, when we were realizing we didn't have to listen to those people. Like, we kept forgetting that those people were working for us.
Right.
You know, and like taking our music and changing it could have been, you know, maybe a different producer would have taken it a different direction. Like, we had this guy, David Bianco, who had done Cold Chamber and Buck Cherry and some other, you know, pretty big bands. And we were like, okay, but originally we wanted Sylvia Massey, and she's just unbelievable. She did like System of a Down and Tool, and, you know, way more organic and raw producing. So it could have been a completely different record, but we definitely had more than five songs. We actually had a whole, like, I think we had like 31 songs going into making One Nation Under. And then we came down with 13 that ended up on the album. Yeah. I mean, like, the song Gone, the last song on the album, we just had kind of come up with as a filler and like a reprisal of The Other Side, which was supposed to be a big single for us, but the label dropped the ball completely. So that was kind of the end of that, like, for me at least, because then I landed at Uptown Recording with From Zero to do pre-production for the second record, and I just stayed here and they kept going. and then, like, not even 7 weeks after the album, the second album came out, they were dropped. And it's funny, is like, I kind of foresaw that, because the label had signed us for two albums with a firm, you know, not an option. It was two. And if they weren't going to do the second one, they had to pay us out. And us being very savvy and tech savvy and production savvy, we could have made our own record with the money they gave us. And they were afraid of that. So they went ahead and pushed us into the second record cycle, gave us an advance, of which the band split equally. I took mine and I stayed at Uptown Recording. Because I didn't want to go through all the bullshit that I knew was about to happen, where they had to go make another record, write a whole bunch of new material, because all the old songs that were ditched off of One Nation Under's catalog that we didn't use, those were not valid. They didn't want to hear those. They wanted brand new material. And they were more concerned with us, you know, making our own record without them and maybe making a big hit and they not being part of it. And I think that was a big label eye-opener for the band as well, because when they got dropped, it was like just downhill. They couldn't create anymore, because they had just spent all that time making another batch of songs, and those songs were shelved in a sense. They only released like 7,000 copies of that album.
Back to like a little bit of happier time. When you guys signed with Arista, were other people, other guys looking at you guys? Was Arista kind of one that kind of popped up?
We had a bunch of labels. It was actually a great time, because they would fly you out, pick you up in black cars and take you out to dinners. And I mean, TVT was one of the first labels that came after us. Roadrunner was after us, which in hindsight, we probably should have signed with them, because they would have known what to do with a band like us. And that was what we were looking for, was kind of the label that knew what to do with us. But also, we didn't want to be second to anybody. And TBT, what had at the time, Seven Dust was huge. Yeah. And this band, Nothing Face was huge for at least for that label. And so we would have been third in line. And I think that being third in line would have been a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, and like, what I've heard, you know, TVT wasn't all that great. TVT was one of the few labels that actually looked into my early stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember a girl at the same time you guys put out One Nation Under, a girl named Lennon? She was signed to Arista at the same time.
Oh yeah, we did some touring with her actually at the tail end of the first album cycle for From Zero, and she had a a very interesting backstory. Like, her parents had died and she was taking care of her little sister, and her little sister was on the road with her.
Yeah.
And through some like financial settlement thing that had happened, she was able to purchase her own tour bus and, like, you know, kind of do her own thing. And everybody in the band, I think, was hired guns. Like, it wasn't really a band, but she like wowed L.A. Reid at Arista by playing grand piano in front of him and singing. And he heard the story, saw her, and you know, right away his marketing mind went to town and they signed her. But she like got dropped right away. It didn't fly.
Well, her album came out on September 11th that year. So, you know, a bad omen to begin with.
Well, and that's like, I think Soil's record came out that day too. Like, there were a few bands that had that stigma of having that happen. I mean, we were just at the tail end of the Godsmack Deftones tour when 9/11 happened. So that the whole tour was over and we were making our way back to Chicago, and then that happened. 2 days later, we had a show booked with Soil, and we ended up playing that show, but just pretty much for the bar staff and Soil.
You know, I think the only band, and it's funny you kind of talked about them earlier, the only band that, and I hate to even say profited off of the whole thing, but kind of came out unscathed, was POD, because they had Alive, and they, you know, they had the uplifting nu metal songs, so they were able to kind of almost capitalize on everybody wanting to be happy.
Yeah, and then at the complete 180 of that was Drowning Pool's Bodies, which
right.
completely disappeared at that point. Even though it was such a huge success for them, nobody wanted that song. Nobody was playing that song because of the footage from 9/11. So it was like you either, you know, had something inspirational or you had something that was like, oh, you can't do that. Even though it wasn't about that at all.
Right.
You know, and now the, you know, wrestling world uses that song and it still makes them money.
Well, I think, wasn't it Dream Theater that had the album that was supposed to come out that had the World Trade Center on fire or blowing up or something? They ended up having to shelve that entire album.
I think, yeah, I remember hearing about a band that had that. And then there was a video that someone had that they couldn't do because it showed buildings crumbling. Mm-hmm. There was like a lot of like really weird choices in the industry at that point, just because of the sensitivity and also because of how, I mean, it impacted everyone that I knew because Arista was based in New York. So, you know, we had our booking agency was there, our, you know, accountants were there, and we were, you know, very, very concerned with that whole situation when it happened because of, you know, the connection there. And we were based out of New York, if you think about it in a label sense. And that was, you know, terrible to see that happen to that neighborhood and that area, because we were there so many times. Every time we visited the label, they would take us out on the town.
So yeah, it was a rough time for everybody.
Yeah, that definitely was a difference in the music industry too, because they had to pay attention to all that and, you know, tread lightly. And now it seems like it would be a completely different thing. They would exploit the hell out of it because that's what the industry seems to be doing with everything.
So when did the production bug get in you? Is that something you always wanted to do or just kind of happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did that from the get-go when I was first starting to play bass and working with bands that, you know, I was friends with. They all wanted me to record, and I had a little four-track thing, and I got to play with that a lot. And then I went to college for it for a little bit. I went to Columbia down here in Chicago for a year. But all the teachers and people that were there at the school, they're not really teachers. They're more like professionals teaching you. So I had engineers and people, you know, telling me, you know, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. And I'm like, well, I can go work in studios and that'll do the same thing. And right. So I just started working in studios from that point, and then doing all the From Zero stuff up until One Nation Under. I mean, it was all, like I said, it was all Jet and I. Jet was also very apt at production, but not as tech savvy. He didn't know Pro Tools like I did. He wasn't as fast as I was. So I was like the interface for his creativity. And between the two of us, we did a lot of great things. I mean, not just From Zero, but we worked on some other projects together. And it's and some local bands. And there, I mean, there was a band from Chicago that was real big called Crash Poet. And that's where Rashid from Nonpoint came from. And that band, I did a couple of records for them. And when we landed at Uptown Recording with From Zero, I kind of really found the home. And that was 19 years ago almost, so it was, or 18 years. And it was like, this place sounded great. The room sounded great. And I kind of stuck here because I knew I could make good records. And I've been doing it for a long time now.
So during the recording of One Nation Under, did you do your bass tracks and then kind of stick around and like watch and learn and everything else?
Jet and I actually were the only two around for the mixing. Like our producer, you know, appreciated our skill and our, and then all the pre-production we did with him, he had flown out here to Chicago for 3 days and we spent those 3 days holed up in our rehearsal room with Pro Tools and I was engineering it just because he was in the room listening to the songs and suggesting ideas and, you know, chopping things up with us. And then we spent 3 days driving to LA before making the record, listening to the CDs that we made. So it was like, as soon as I saw that whole process start, I wanted to, you know, I sponged off of it for the whole time. I was in the control room every day, even on vocal days when the rest of the band would take a day off, I would go because I wanted to see how they produced vocals, how they tracked them, what they used, like seeing some things I'd never seen before. Like they were able to get Jet to sing without headphones by using speakers that were like wired backwards somehow so that it would cancel out in the microphone and not make its way into the track.
See, that stuff just blows my mind. Whatever, I know. Like how people figure that kind of stuff out.
Well, and that's how Chris Cornell always sang. He would always sing in the control room with the freaking speakers going loud. But the mics were set up and the speakers were calibrated, I guess, in a certain way that allowed him to do that without it really making a big deal. You know, like, and that's something that singers want more than anything is to be able to sing without headphones, because the minute you put headphones on somebody, it changes their perception of their own voice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even right now doing a podcast and, you know, headphones in right now, it's like, yeah, that's what my voice sounds like. Let's not do that, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's because there's no resonance when you hear it back. You know, it's like you have no vibration happening like you do when you're talking. So everyone thinks they have a deeper voice than they really do, I'm sure.
My voice is definitely not deep. It's pretty crazy to be able to say that you worked at the same studio for, you know, 19 years in this climate of studios coming and going.
Yeah, it's been a lot of pull from, you know, the music industry as I, you know, got a few years of knowing a lot of different people. So I've had a lot of projects that came to me from that, like managers and people that I had known and some bands that we had toured with. And the first few years here, I mean, it was every band in Chicago wanted to record with me because From Zero was so popular in Chicago. And then slowly when that kind of dissolved away and nobody really knew who they were anymore as far as the scene and the music scene changed dramatically in Chicago, I started doing a lot of work with jazz musicians because there's a jazz club down the street from here called the Green Mill that's been open for 110 years. So there's a lot of jazz people in this neighborhood. And then we're right by this theater called the Riviera Theater, which is a big place, and the Aragon Ballroom, which is also a big place. So I get some of that kind of exposure. And then every once in a while, some random big projects come through here, like Nonpoint doing a couple of records here, which has been awesome. I mean, I did the Poison Red and we did X here. So those were like Universal Music record budgets, not as big as they used to be, but still way bigger than any local band coming through. And so that's been able to supplement this place. And we own the building, which is a huge deal.
Nice.
Like most studios lease. And when the building gets sold, the lease gets expired or the rent goes way up. They can't afford to stay there anymore. I mean, it happened to a lot of big studios in the city. And every time that happens, it's kind of like good for us because we're getting some clients bill. You know, like those people need to record somewhere. Then they need a place that's not going anywhere. And we're just always here.
So did you have a relationship with Nonpoint before they recorded there?
We toured with them. Okay. We did a couple weeks of touring in Texas and Louisiana area. It was Mudvayne and Nonpoint supporting them, and we were the openers. So it was just a three band bill, and it was us, Nonpoint, Mudvayne. And that was a really fun couple weeks because Mudvayne being from Peoria and we're from Chicago, we kind of had that Illinois connection, and a lot of their crew were guys that were in the Chicago music scene and got taken away to be crew for Mudvayne because they were, you know, the big thing from, you know, that era. And Nonpoint had just been on their first record. Like, our record was 2 months away from coming out, and we got thrown on that tour. So that was my first meeting of all those guys, but it was just the four-piece that they originally started as. And then when Rashid and Adam and at the point this guy Dave was in Nonpoint, I knew those three guys already from other bands. So it was like kind of almost a no-brainer when they came here because it was like I knew all of them.
Right.
And I come from the same school, you know, like I know that music, I know that production style they want. I know what their band should sound like. I've seen them live enough times. I toured with them. I knew the energy that they brought, and trying to capture that and recreate that is what I do in the studio. You know, it's like I try to make sure that it translates when you hear the recording, because a lot of people make comments about records that are too polished or too smooth. They don't sound raw like the band does when they're live. And I tried that with Poison Red, and the label went with it. And then on X, they hired a producer, but I still got engineering on it. And they also had me play bass on the whole record. So I got bass credits.
Is there a reason why you played bass on it, or is that like a touchy subject?
You know, I don't know what they really officially say about it. I mean, they say I'm on it. I mean, Rob's been out on live saying I'm on it all the time, saying Robert should play bass on X. It was really coming down to like the writing process. And at the point we were at, the producers that were involved, you know, and the timeline that we had, it seemed like I was a better fit for it because I was already writing with them. And like I had them in the studio and they were trying to come up with parts. And Adam is an amazing bass player. I mean, he's really talented and his stage presence is freaking amazing. But he was struggling with coming up with like songs on his own or ideas and, you know, just kind of playing with the guys that already laid down, whereas I was trying what they had laid down but adding my own thing.
Okay.
And I did it with a few songs, and right away Elias and Rob were like, holy shit, you know, let's keep feeding Rob stuff and see what he comes up with. And I kept coming up with good stuff, and then Rashid and Rob and I got together in a room one day and we wrote a song called Milestones that's on X. And it just came out of us like nothing. Guy started a bass line. Rob started a drum beat. Next thing you know, we had a whole song. Elias heard it, came up with this sick freaking rap flow thing on it that he hadn't done in a long time. And he loved it because it made him feel like old school Nonpoint. And now they play that song live. And it's really weird to see it being played live without me playing it. It's awesome, actually. I like it.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not into going on tour, and I'm too old to jump like those guys do.
Right.
And I know those guys are old, but are older.
No, they're old. Know, don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. No, Rob calls it. Yeah, actually, Milestones was originally called Old Ass Balls before it was called Milestones. But that's because we were three old ass ball guys in a fucking room, you know, doing our thing. But it really is interesting. They still do it like they did when they were, you know, 20 years ago. They still jump freaking 4 or 5 feet off the ground and land, and they're probably killing their body, you know, every show.
And I know
stop,
that the
so that's why they can do it.
The guys in Nonpoint are all very talented, but to sit, especially in your position, to just be able to just sit and watch BC play, it's got to be got to be pretty amazing, you know, watching him under the microscope like that.
Oh, not even that, but like as a person, he's got to be one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life.
True,
And very quick-witted and super talented, amazing guitar player, and just, you know, effortless, it seems, when he does it. You know, it's like the only thing that ever happens to his performance live is his dreadlocks get in the way sometimes. You know, and the same thing happens with Rashid, both of them. I'm like, I'll listen to the live recordings I'm doing, and I'm like, up, dread hit. Like, you know, or sometimes the chord gets muted because the dreads landed right on the fretboard. You know, it's like, ah, there it is. And in the studio, that never happens. He ties it up like a pineapple on top of his head. But it's so accurate the way he plays, and then like he shreds it live too. It's amazing. And between Rashid and him, they've done X. They started doing some harmonizing stuff with guitars like back and forth, and they did that on Poison Red as well. And to be able to hear that in Nonpoint was really cool, because they used to just have one guitar player, you know, and it's like to have two that are equally, you know, talented in different ways. Like Rashid's got an amazing right hand for picking, and BC's leads are just what we call the sauce. Like every time there was a song we were working on in the writing process, it would come across, and then BC would add his sauce, and it would be like, oh, there it is. You know, like just that's the thing that he brings is that. And so, yeah, he's definitely cool to not only hang with, but watch play guitar and in the studio. And the way we had the setup going, it was just Kempers to the right of the console. So they were right in the control room playing the whole time.
The band that only had 5 songs that got signed was the band No One.
Yeah, yeah. So. That and actually that was whatchamacallit. They went on to do other things. Like No One became a couple of different things out of that. I forgot what they did, but God, that was one of the five or six that got signed in a row. It was No One, Relative Ash was another one. Mm-hmm. 5.0 is another one.
Man, that Soil. Chicago scene was crazy there for a minute.
I know. Disturbed, From Zero, Soil, 5.0, Relative Ash, No One. It was like bam, 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 record deal, record deal, record deal. It was like they were going out of style.
Right. It was almost like a mini, like new metal Seattle or something.
That's exactly what that's what I was saying earlier. It's like that happened in Chicago. It happened in Florida. It happened in California, like right around the same time. All these bands just like, you know, Linkin Park for the longest time was getting denied record deals before what became the Hybrid Theory was demoed out and had Chester singing on it. You know, it's all of a sudden they popped out of the West Coast and all these bands were getting signed out of the West Coast. Papa Roach, POD, Linkin Park, you know, just same kind of deal, like one after the other.
So did you grow up in Chicago?
Yeah, I was born here and pretty much my whole life has been here. We spent some time in L.A. when we were doing the record. But now I live split between Chicago and Southern Illinois.
Okay. Growing up, I mean, were you aware of like, you know, Ministry and all that stuff and Nine Inch Nails and all that going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of cross music promotions going on here, and you'd always see different people from different, you know, genres. But guys from Ministry actually owned a studio here in Chicago, so I knew about them just from that too. Up and coming, you know, wanting to be in working in recording studios, it was like, ooh, there's a studio that Al Jorgensen owns. I'm like, I wonder if he's hiring. You know, it's like just because you know that it's going to be a cool studio because Ministry was big at the time. So, yeah, there was definitely a lot of that that crossbreed. Like, some of the Filter guys came from Chicago. There was a couple of other Stabbing Westward was from not too far from up north here. Tom Morello was from Libertyville, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. So there was always, like, a big, like, you know, like, I guess that's the inspiration why, you know, I even started to play music is because there were so many big things coming out of Illinois.
Yeah, it's definitely a crazy, crazy town to be a part of. The Robcast podcast, you know, I obviously have listened since day one just because of Rob contributing weekly to this show for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he even like asked me 1,000 questions, you know, leading up to you guys doing a podcast, you know, what should we do? When should we, you know, all the questions I always get from everybody wanting to start a podcast. But you guys have been killing it, man. The guest lists have been amazing. You know, you guys are getting some you know, blabbermouth coverage and all that stuff, man. You guys are doing good stuff right off the bat.
Yeah, it was like kind of a good marriage between Rob and I doing this, because like I wouldn't have the access to the guests that he does, but he wouldn't have the access to the technology and the way to produce it the way that we're doing, and to be able to cut them the way we do, so that, you know, we're getting ahead of the schedule enough so that when Rob goes on the road for 4 or 5 weeks, we still have episodes coming out, you know, and I'm able to edit them to still make them sound relevant and not dated. And it's kind of a great way to do it with someone like him. And then when we're, you know, when he is out on tour, I've gone out a few times on the road to do some live recording for them. And I bring my podcast mobile rig out. And we grabbed like what we did with episode 10 on our podcast, which was everybody playing on the Full Circle tour. So we got to interview POD and Hyro the Hero and, you know, all these different bands that were on that same show. And that's amazing. Would not have had that accessibility if it wasn't for the Nonpoint connection.
Yeah, he's able to do some stuff that, you know, you and I couldn't do with these guests too, because he's so familiar with them. And most of them are bands that he's toured with, so their guard is already way down. So they're gonna have some conversations that.
Well, you know. And what's great is, I mean, the blabbermouth thing is funny, is because they're trying to find dirt, it seems, and yeah. You know, there's no dirt. We're not coaching these people into things. They know what they've said, and we let them hear it before we put it out, so that, you know, they're aware and they don't care. You know, like with what Jeff Scott Soto said, I mean, he said it and it's out there. I mean, when we did the Biohazard with Billy Bio one, that was like, he's like, do you want this clean or do you want this real? Nice. It's like, let's keep this real, you know, like, because that's, I think, what people have really made good comments. Like the reviews that we have gotten have been really positive in that sense. Like, we're keeping it real. you know, and we're not like sugarcoating things. And like there's an episode coming out Friday that I think is probably going to be the lowest listened to because it's all about technology and recording. And I interview Stephen Slate, who's like a big guy in the music industry as far as gear. But Rob's reactions are hilarious because he's just like, my head hurts. He's like, all this nerd talk.
But that type of stuff, you know, people do enjoy listening to that type of stuff too. So it's not
sure.
It's not
well,
all
that,
just, you
that
know.
That was the original idea of the podcast. We're trying to make both sides of the glass, like, you know, the musician side, the engineer side, what happens on both sides, how it connects, how we have to work together. How it's better that I'm a musician as well, because being a musician, I understand both sides. Like I can figure it. Hey, I understand I play on this thing and I'm not only playing on it, but I'm hitting the space bar to stop it. You know, like, and I think that like is why Rob and I get along so well, is because I teach him those things too. He's been able to record himself at home now. And, you know, I've even taught him how to do the podcast where he's at home on a mic. I'm at home on a mic and then we FaceTime a guest. And then I've synced up the tracks and it sounds like we're still in studio together.
Right.
Which is great. And I think for my big thing is the quality issue. You know, it's like I love listening to podcasts, but some of them have differentiating quality. You know, like there's a few that are really well done. But of course, those are like, you know, Joe Rogan or, you know, they got huge budgets. You know, it's like, so they're, you know, in a great environment. And sometimes we're not. Like, we were in the trailer at the machine shop in Flint, Michigan when we did our podcast, you know, and it was like air conditioner noise and bands every time the door opened, we're sound checking. I was like, what the hell? But you know what? I think it made it raw and real because we even, you know, like I told Rob, I'm like, I don't care about this one because this is like, hey, we're here. We're in the shit. You know, it's going to be noisy.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, the only ones I don't care for too much is, a couple times I've done ones on someone's bus and they've got that, and it's that weird constant bus hum that's under everything. And you're just like, that's the one noise I don't like, but for the most part, you can handle most.
Yeah. And nowadays, I mean, there's a lot of tech I've got that can kind of remove a lot of that. Yeah. I had to do that with one of our segments on episode 10, because Rob did it on the bus with the singer from the band Nine Shrines. And so it's like, the whole time it's the generator
as
it's always got to be on. So I'm like, god damn it, could you not have done it outside of the bus or somewhere away from the generator? But it was fine. I got rid of as much of it as I could. And but he also recorded it on his iPhone, which made it a mono track for both of them.
Oof.
So I had no separation between Rob or Chris the singer, and I was like, well, it's a short segment, it's fine. We just couldn't leave that band out because they were on the tour and they weren't anywhere to be found when we were at the machine shop. So I was like, Rob, grab this guy on your bus and just talk to him for a minute.
The one thing you guys did with Dave Ellefson of Megadeth, the one thing I like that you did was you got a little nerdy with him, which I thought was cool. And he is such a great guest anyway. They really, you guys don't have to say more than like five words and he's just going to go. But you know, you getting him to talk about his bass playing and the sounds and things like that, he really broke down. He's like, yeah, on Rust in Peace, you know, right here where I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. And he like got into it deep, and I'm like, wow, that was awesome.
He blew my mind with that when he's going into the type of pick he used, the type of fingerboard he's got on the bass, and how it has ebony. And like, I was like, geez, man. I'm like, I just was like a kid listening to that album going, this is cool. You know, and like I but it's funny, as Rob and I always laugh about that. We just want to avoid being like that Saturday Night Live skit with Chris Farley that used to do where he'd be in the elevator with somebody, be like, that was awesome. You know, like everything they remember that when you're in the Beatles, that was awesome.
Yeah. Anytime you can do that. I mean, if it comes across genuine, it's okay. Cause Rob does nerd out and fanboy out a lot because he is such a huge fan of music. You know, that's the thing. You know, he did the Rob Rivera's Pick from the Kit for over a year on this show, and every week he would send me a track of audio, and it would be like 5 minutes of him just gushing over a band I hadn't thought about in 10 years. You know, you're like, wow, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's got a great collection of his history of music, which is great. Every time I talk with him, it's like, and now his obsession with vinyl is kind of passed on to me. I've started to get into vinyl a lot more, and he's got all these great records that we've been listening to. So it's he does definitely, like, a few times he's gone a little, I say not nerdy, but just over the top with like excitement on things. Like when we first started some of these episodes, he was like, all right, let's do this. Come on. I'm like, all right. I'm like, and the more we did, it was like, I got to edit all this stuff. Like our podcast started like 28 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. Then all of a sudden there were a few ones that were like an hour. And it was like, oh, there's even more stuff. And then guest interviews. It's like, oh my God. And episode 10 took me like almost like 3 or 4 days to actually edit everything down.
Oh yeah, but that's the part nobody gets, man, or nobody sees, is the amount of editing that you have to do on these things. And not even just taking out ums and yas and yips and all this other nonsense, just getting everything in order and all this other nonsense. It's like, I'm to the point now where I'm, you know, I think my 4-year anniversary is coming up, so I've got it pretty well streamlined how I'm going to do things. But yeah, over there for a long time, it was a long, long time. You know, for every hour, you know, it was like 7 hours of editing or something.
Yeah, you never realize how long it takes to edit a minute of audio until you zoom back out and go, I got 27 more minutes of this. And it was just like an hour to just get this thing tightened up and make it sound right. Especially a lot of times with like what we do, either Skype or FaceTime audio, it kind of starts to get random delay. Like you can have it sound like the person is like not paying attention. If you're not careful, you have to shorten the gaps in between people's replies. Otherwise it's like a lot of dead air.
Oh yeah. You get those all the time. What's kind of the one takeaway from doing a podcast that you've outside of editing and all that other stuff? I mean, the, you know, talking to the guests or anything like that, what have you taken away so far?
I think that it's a lot more than people think it is. That's for sure. I've definitely gotten into listening to a lot more podcasts, and yours included. I mean, that was what Rob and I did for the first few weeks when we were trying to get ours figured out. It's like, we need to listen to all these different ones, you know, like, and see what's going on and then see what works and what doesn't for us. You know, so a lot of it, I think, has something, you know, just trying to figure out where we want to take it, you know, like, and now we've kind of got a pretty good idea of, you know, we've got a lot of musical guests, and then we got to get some technology involved, and then we got to go back to doing a few where it's just him and I. So we're going to try to keep it always something different, so we're not just doing guest after guest. But we also wanted to start talking about like mental health out on the road. And like, we started doing a lot of more research. I think that's the thing I took away the most from, is you have to do your research before going out and, you know, interviewing people or asking them questions. You want to sound educated if you're not already, you know, and that's something that we kind of didn't think about when we started doing it. Like when we say things and we have to go double check before I was editing, I'm like, I got to Google this to make sure I just didn't make an ass of myself. And it's like, okay, I'm right. That was the guy's name. And there was one point where I accidentally mistaken during, I cut it out completely, so no one will ever hear this, but it was, I for some reason confused Sons of Apollo, which is Jeff Scott Soto's band, with Light the Torch, which is Howard Jones from Killswitch's new band. And I was like thinking Jeff Scott Soto sang for Light the Torch, and not, I was like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? I'm like, what band is he in? And Rob's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, thank God he's not on the phone right now.
That's like earlier when I was confusing your backstory with no one's backstory, so you know that it happens.
Oh yeah, no, and that's the thing, is like, with, you know, that's one thing that I guess I've learned more than anything, is, you know, going in prepared so that it's less work on the back end,
right?
You know, like if being aware of, like, you know, how many times I say something or how many times I may pronounce something a certain way, or, you know, like I'm hearing my voice back going like, is that how I say that word? You know, and even like some people I know have brought it up to me where they're like, you say that word funny. And I'm like, what word? They're like, and it's all about like the word happen. For some reason I say it with an M, like hampen, and I don't know why. But I, for like the longest time now, I guess I've been doing it so much that I never noticed. So now when I'm editing the podcast, I find like any M's and I take them out.
Wow.
In case I slip and I'm trying to say the word happen more than the proper way, so that I don't get made fun of, I guess you could say. But that's the thing, like, you know, you don't want, it's like self-conscious. There's no, you know, background to drown you out. It's just your voice on there. You know, it's like we do some musical thing for our intro and outro, but we don't put music underneath the whole time. So anything you say is just naked, you know, like you're out there.
Yeah, that's definitely the podcast world that we're living in now. I guess last we'll finish it off with a silly from within. See, I almost called it from within again. From zero question with the kid on the cover of the album. Who is that kid? Where did he come from?
That kid was in a Godsmack video, like when he was like 9 years old, and we saw his picture when our video people at Arista were talking. And like our graphic art people were talking, they were like, you know, we want to, you know, represent like the nation that's coming up, you know, like with a picture of this boy. And I'm like, okay. So that was pretty much it. His name is Andrew. I don't know where he is now. I'd love to figure out where he is now, because he must be in his 30s, like almost, because he was 10 and that was like 18 years ago. So he's got to be 28.
And I'm sure a quick Facebook search if he's like, you know.
Well, I don't know what his last name is, but I'm guessing it's in the credits. I don't know if it is or not. I remember they couldn't let him be in the room for more than like a certain amount of time without taking breaks because of child labor laws, and like his mom had to be present the whole time. It was like a $10,000 shoot for that cover.
Days of $10,000 photo shoots.
I know. And like $150,000 video budget, you know. It was like, okay, you know, like what? And then like to, you know, get like you know, the way that our artwork was designed and stuff, that cost money. All this stuff was so expensive. But yeah, that little kid is like, there was no significance to him whatsoever. There was like really a lack of significance to anything the label directed us to do. That's the greatest quote I think I could sum it up, because they were like, with the music video, I mean, have you seen the music video for Czechia? Yeah. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, what the hell is it? Like, all of a sudden we're in a little ball floating around on a screen, and then all of a sudden like things are exploding, and it's like Black Hole Sun ripoff where things are getting sucked into a void. I'm like, what does this have to do with the song? Like, it made no sense. But we spent 150 grand on it and had tons of CGI. We spent 8 hours in front of a green screen. Like, and then the remaining time of the 15-hour shoot was in the Hollywood subway. Like Hollywood, like, and I didn't even know that Hollywood had a subway, because I would never put a subway in the earthquake capital of our country. But they have a subway and nobody uses it. And so we were able to get it blocked out for like 6 hours and film on some scaffolding. And if you ever look at the video in the lower right hand corner, you can see a sign that says to North Hollywood.
Well, I would definitely take a look at that afterwards. All right, Rob, well, make sure everybody checks out the Robcast podcast. That's with two B's. You are one of the Robs, and we will finish this episode out with we'll do Milestone by Nonpoint. We did start out with Czechia by From Zero, so sandwich of your bass playing there. So, man, I appreciate you taking the time tonight.
No problem, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Whenever you get the instruction, whenever you get that eruption, whenever you get the conviction, whenever you lose a correction, whenever you bring to the table, whatever you're willing and able to do, whenever you want to be able to be in a little more willing and able than you, give a shit, take a minute and work it in, take a ticket and wait a second and straighten out this crap. Being a trash in the front yard, in the backlash, in the lack of attention inside the house. You need attention inside the house. You need affection inside the house. You need reflection inside the house. But there's no mirrors inside the house. You need reflection, you need reflection. Oh, section by section, please.
All right, huge thank you to Rob Ruscia of the Robcast podcast. Make sure you guys are checking that out each Friday. He hosts that with good friend of the show, Rob Rivera of Nonpoint, and has some great guests on there that we talked about on the episode. So make sure you're checking that out wherever you get your podcast. Wherever you hear Talk To Me, you can hear the Robcast podcast. Make sure you guys are checking out Talk To Me Live, uncontrolledoise.com, Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific. So if you're in California, Oregon, Washington, somewhere over there on the left coast, it's drive time with Toomey. How can you beat that? Just a huge thank you to you guys for listening each and every week. Make sure you are leaving a nice 5-star rating, nice 5-star review. Wherever you can leave a review for podcasts, it grows the podcast exponentially. And I will appreciate it very much if you can do that for the show. Doesn't cost you a dime. So until next Thursday, for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you soon.